Welcome. Today is Thursday, August 4th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump tries to turn the focus away from himself.
Look at him. He's done hundreds of millions of dollars of commercials. We haven't started yet.
World condemnation as North Korea continues to show aggression towards its neighbors. Millions of dollars given to Iran wasn't ransom money for hostages. Also ahead, set for release this weekend, a review of the most anticipated movie of the summer. It's all on today's International Edition. The U.S. presidential campaign continues to dominate conversations across the United States. Donald Trump's week-long feud with Khazir and Ghazala Khan, the Muslim parents of a U.S. soldier killed in Iraq, seems to be subsiding, but there are lingering tensions with top party leaders. Joining me to talk more about it, Katie Glick, national political reporter for Politico.
Thanks very much for having me. Great to be with you. You're right, it has been a particularly tumultuous couple of days for Donald Trump and more broadly for the Republican Party. And certainly over even the last 24 hours or so, we've seen chatter intensifying about whether some of his allies are going to actually try and sit down with him and tell him that he needs to make a more serious course correction. You know, whether or not that happens and what the ultimate impact of such a move would be, I think remains to be seen, and are maybe different questions, but certainly we are seeing increasingly Republicans, including Republicans that supportive of Trump, expressing pretty vocally concerns about the way that they feel that he's been conducting his campaign. But at the same time, he just came out and had a rally, and both there and on Twitter has stressed that his campaign is unified and is going forward.
He has done some things that are pretty unprecedented in our political arena, from going on the attack against a Gold Star family to not endorsing the most powerful GOP leader in Washington, Paul Ryan. And every day we seem to see more Republicans coming forward saying, no, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. How much of a problem is this for Donald Trump's campaign?
Well, certainly I agree on the point that he's made a number of unprecedented moves. It's a pretty long list. I mean, I think what you said all transpired, within a span of 24 hours, perhaps even less than that. But at the same time, yes, we absolutely are seeing, some Republicans coming out. And, I think it's really a handful right now who are saying aloud that they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I think that's really the space to watch over, the next week or so, is what extent do we actually see, the floodgates open here? Do we not see that? Because so far, well, it's certainly notable, acknowledge on the record that they're going to be voting for Hillary Clinton. They tend to be, operatives, donors, one member of Congress who I believe is not running for re-election. So, I mean, if you start seeing Republican senators coming out and saying that, then I think that it's a different ballgame. No mass exodus here yet, but certainly notable that we are seeing some Republicans openly acknowledging that they're going to vote for the other side, which, something people have privately long talked about, but is not something folks really felt comfortable at all saying aloud.
I read on the Politico website that they're also having a lot of trouble getting Republican lawmakers to go out and campaign for Donald Trump, that they're concerned about their own political future.
Right. Well, it's a complicated calculation for a lot of candidates who are up for re-election, because on the one hand, they don't want to alienate their base, rank and file Republican voters by saying they're not voting for Donald Trump, because even if they don't say they're voting for Hillary Clinton, that opens you up to the charge that, well, if Hillary Clinton wins, you did not do everything you could to sort of stop her. But at the same time, especially in some of these battleground states, to get behind Trump is to, do something that's very polarizing. I mean, he's certainly a polarizing figure, where in a presidential election, an inherently polarizing time. So, certainly a complicated calculation, especially against those folks running in battleground states. And so what you're seeing a lot of them do is say, yes, I'm supporting the Republican nominee, but otherwise, really not talk much about him, which is something that Trump has indicated in recent interviews that he's taken note of, and that perhaps he finds problematic.
Can he turn it around?
Sure. We still have 3 months to go. That is a lifetime in presidential politics, especially this cycle, you know, where news cycles have shifted so dramatically, you know, day by day. But what is clear is that he has had a couple of particularly rough days, and increasingly some Republicans do appear to be feeling more comfortable with creating some space from him, but that's really kind of that key question over the next couple of weeks. How comfortable do these Republicans feel? But if you start really seeing a lot of elected officials, you know, saying they're going to vote for Hillary, that would really be quite the development.
If Hillary Clinton were to win the election, is it probable that Donald Trump will say that it was all rigged?
And that is what he's been signaling and messaging the last couple of days. It seems that he's already testing out that argument. And so, you know, if he's saying it now, when, you know, certainly it's still a competitive race, and then, you know, should he lose, you know, it certainly is possible that would be an argument that we would hear down the road. But, you know, long way between now and November.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective, national political reporter for Politico, Katie Glick. Well, I also had the privilege to speak with Christina Ayoub, who added her name to a letter written to Donald Trump by the group Vote Vets.
I am a Gold Star mom. I am that because my son, Sergeant James Ayoub, was killed in Afghanistan on December 8, 2010, while on patrol. He was a medic.
I am so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Thank you for your son's sacrifice and service. What was your reaction to Donald Trump's reaction in response to some of the comments made by Khazir Khan at the Democratic National Convention?
I would love to say I was shocked, but unfortunately, with the way his behavior has been, I wasn't. He is very self-absorbed narcissist. His first reaction was, he's attacking me. Mr. Khan came here from Pakistan. He is a Muslim, but he is not a radical or anything else. He and his wife came here. His son was a U.S. citizen. He was born here. He was raised here. He fought for his country, and he died for his country. Now, unless Donald Trump can say to all of the Gold Star families, I have suffered or I have experienced a brother, a sibling, a child, the same loss, all he should have said is, I'm so sorry for your loss, and this country is with you, and walked away. But he couldn't do that. And now we're supposed to elect this man president who cannot even fathom what we go through on a daily basis. This isn't a military loss is different from other losses. Not that it's worse or anything else, but unfortunately, when it's a military loss, that Band-Aid is ripped off every Memorial Day, every Veterans Day, every time your child's birthday rolls around or their death rolls around, but you have those other events. And then inevitably, somewhere along the way, someone wants your reaction when, say, Saddam Hussein is killed or Osama bin Laden. You're expected to be the voice. So you're never allowed just to grieve and kind of process it. And to have someone who is supposed to be leading our country, leading us all, over the next 4 to 8 years, be this insensitive and utterly unable to comprehend what people go through is just beyond belief. I mean, I can't imagine him being allowed to sit behind that desk in the Oval Office.
The pain of losing a child, much less the pain of losing a child in combat, does that ever get easier or go away?
No. Time doesn't really heal all wounds, but maybe a callus forms, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's never healed. It's never going to go away. That future that we all have had before that draped coffin came through our lives with our children in it, that future, that line of our future is gone. It will never happen. That son will never have a son, a daughter. He will never have grandchildren. That is gone.
Do you want an apology from Donald Trump?
It would be nice, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. At this point, I think I would like him just to understand that what he said, not just making fun of the cons, because that was bad enough, but then in turn accepting a Purple Heart from someone and saying, oh, I always wanted one of these. My son earned his Purple Heart. He was killed. That's how he earned his Purple Heart. to get a Purple Heart means that you have been hurt, you've been injured, you've been killed, you've done something for someone else. And I don't think Donald Trump understands what he says. I think instead of a Purple Heart, he should have been given a dictionary.
What did the letter say?
After this came out that he was attacking the Khans, Vote for Vets wrote a letter and asked the Gold Star families who would like to sign it. And so there was a group of us who said, yes, my husband and I were one of them, and we wanted to sign the letter because it basically said you don't know what you're talking about and you need to step up and apologize and really think about what you say before you say it.
Do you know if he ever read the letter, and if so, did he respond?
I don't know if he's ever read it, but I have not heard that he has responded to it. I don't think he would step up and say, I'm sorry. He would just say that we were all wrong and we were attacking him. At this point, this is turning into more of an educational situation than it is to actually getting a literal apology.
Well, we thank you so much for your time. Gold Star Mom, Christina Ayoub. Let's check in now on a completely different topic, lighten things up a bit now with our social media expert, G. Abby Lee, for what's been trending online. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori. The big story on Wednesday is definitely hashtag Instagram stories. The photo and video sharing app launched a new feature, which many people say resembles another social media app called Snapchat. And just like Snapchat, the photos and videos created with a new feature disappear in 24 hours. But it also gives you the option to post them on the regular feed if you like. Lori, since Snapchat is not as popular abroad, let me briefly explain what it is. It's an image messaging app where the content you share with your friends disappear in 24 hours. It also has different filters that people can use to transform themselves into different characters. I'm on there as well, at The Gist with G. That's THEGISTWITHJEE.
Wow, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the public's reaction like to this new feature?
The uncanny resemblance was not missed by both the media and the public. Adweek and Gizmodo reported on it, and here's a top comment on Gizmodo's Facebook post. A user named Mike commented, Instagram stories are exactly the same, except they don't have the cool filters and all that.
Cool. Filters are important. I expect Instagram to have announced it on their Facebook page, too, since it's owned by Facebook.
That's right. It shared a sort of how-to video on its page that's been viewed more than 32,000 times and shared by more than 120 people so far. The top comment to that post reads like this. Facebook, you completely ruined Instagram with your quote-unquote algorithm. Stop trying to make every social media use algorithm. It's not fun for any user. So stop trying to become Snapchat. Just bring back the original Instagram feed. Nearly 300 people liked that comment. That's all for me today. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can find her and follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Afghan forces say they've captured a key Islamic State base. Washington Transit police officer is arrested on terrorism charges. President Obama commutes the sentences for 24 prisoners, the most in a century. More than 30 U.S. troops contract Zika overseas. And the second Fantastic Beasts movie coming in November 2018, according to Warner. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues now. The United States airlifted $400 million in foreign currencies to Iran in January to partially settle a decades-old dispute over an aborted arms deal, On the same day, Tehran released 5 American hostages. But Washington is denying the exchange amounted to any ransom payment. Iranian media reports have quoted senior defense officials as saying they considered the cash ransom. But White House spokesman Josh Earnest said that just wasn't the case.
That's something that we told the Iranians that we would not do. We would not, we have not, we will not pay a ransom to secure the release of U.S. citizens. That's a fact. That is our policy and is one that we have assiduously followed.
Well, U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is accusing his challenger Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State at the time, of complicity in the payment.
Our country took $400 million in cash, but different currencies, different places, different representatives representing those places took $400 million, put it in airplanes, and flew it over to Iran.
Well, the cash transfer and the release of the hostages came at the same time as Iran's deal with the United States and 5 other world powers restraining Tehran's development of nuclear weapons, along with the lifting of sanctions that had hurt Iran's economy. South Korean military officials say North Korea has fired a ballistic missile into the ocean off of its eastern coast, the latest in a series of missile tests. The U.S. military said it detected 2 simultaneous missile launches, one successful, the other exploded immediately after launch. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe called the missile launch a grave threat to Japan's security and expressed strong objections to the North's continued ballistic missile aspirations. UN spokesman Stefan Dujarric.
We are once again deeply troubled by the latest test firing of missiles by the Democratic Republic of Korea, one of which reportedly landed in Japan's exclusive economic zone. Such actions seriously undermine regional peace and stability. We reiterate the call on the DPRK to heed the united call of the international community to reverse its course and return to the process of sincere dialogue.
The United States immediately responded to the ballistic missile test, warning the North Koreans that it's ready to defend itself and its allies from any provocation. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
Jazz America!
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA. Athletes, sports teams, and spectators from around the world are gathering and arriving in Rio de Janeiro ahead of Friday's official opening of the Summer Olympics. Zlatica Holt reports the games have been marred with controversy.
Rio's iconic Ipanema beach was crowded with visitors early this week. Denmark's royalty inaugurated the country's hospitality tent on Tuesday, while memorabilia collectors met outside the Olympic park gates to swap pins.
Well, I've been to 16 Olympic Games, and I've been trading pins at 15 of them.
The U.S. beach volleyball players are excited about the prospect of playing at the Copacabana beach.
Yeah, I think it's awesome to be playing on a natural beach. It's how we practice every day, and the atmosphere just changes a little bit being on a natural beach.
Among the competing teams from around the world, one is made up entirely of refugees. For the first time in the history of the Games, the 10-member team includes athletes from South Sudan, Syria, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Ethiopia. But just 3 days before the grand opening, major international rights groups led by Amnesty International renewed their call for the International Olympic Committee to address a spike in police violence in Brazil.
In the past 3 months, between April and June, the increase in the number of people killed by the police in the city of Rio was of 100% when in comparison with the same period last year.
The committee again defended its decision to let some Russian athletes participate in the Games despite evidence of state-sponsored doping at the Sochi Olympics. Clean athletes will be allowed to participate in Rio under the Russian flag.
You cannot punish a human being for the failures of his or her government if he or she is not implicated.
But a former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, which presented the evidence of doping, said justice could have been served differently.
Personally, I thought we could have got to the same protection of individual rights by allowing them to say, sure, if you're clean, you're welcome, behind the Olympic flag, not the Russian flag. This is your government that organized it.
The Summer Games in Rio open Friday and run until August 21st. More than 10,500 athletes from 206 nations will participate. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study finds a huge region at the center of the Milky Way is devoid of young stars. A team of Japanese, South African, and Italian astronomers found that there are no Cepheid stars in an area that extends some 8,000 light years from our galaxy center. Cepheid stars are said to repeatedly pulsate in brightness and are quite young, between 10 and 300 million years old, in comparison to our 4.6 billion year old sun. Giuseppe Bono, one of the study's authors, said their research shows that there has been no significant star formation in this large patch of the Milky Way for over hundreds of millions of years. The researchers made their findings after analyzing observations made in the near-infrared light range, since looking for stars so deep in the galaxy can be quite difficult. Accumulations of interstellar dust can block out light and hide many stars from view. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, coming up this weekend, the opening of a movie that a lot of people have been waiting a long time to see. Joining us now, Vegas film critic Jeff Howard, who was able to see a pre-screening of Suicide Squad, which opens this week in theaters. Hi, Jeff.
This is the most anticipated film of the summer. This is the third venture for DC Comics.
Above Star Trek?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. This is because DC is slow out of the gate. You know, with their movies. Marvel's been around for a few years now with their Captain America, their Thor, their Avenger. They've got it down, but DC's been slow out of the gate. Batman v Superman was kind of clunky, and they're really trying to get Justice League America for next year, Wonder Woman, The Flash. So they're really trying to churn out their characters, their movies. But this is Suicide Squad. This has been on the development board for years, and we got some of the biggest stars and the most anticipated villains of all time. And if you don't know what Suicide Squad is, if you're not a comic book fan, it's about 8 imprisoned supervillains. I mean, we're talking the worst of the worst. And they're released by the government under a special Suicide Squad banner to thwart any kind of threats to the United States and to the world. I know it's crazy to think that the supervillains, but if you think that sounds familiar, you're right. It's the Dirty Dozen, you know, with Lee Marvin back in the 1960s. You know, they took these prisoners who were condemned to death and gave them one mission in World War II to say, look, if you survive, you can get out, you know. So this is a Dirty Dozen version of supervillains in comic books.
Was it everything you had hoped it would be? Did it live up to your expectations?
We've got 8 supervillains, you know, with names like El Diablo, Deadshot, Harley Quinn, Boomerang, Killer Croc. And Will Smith plays Deadshot, and he passed on remaking the Independence Day movie this summer, which I'm glad he did because it tanked. He plays Deadshot, the world's greatest assassin. And also, Margot Robbie, who plays Harley Quinn, that and Jared Leto as Joker. And Joker's only in it for maybe 25 minutes, and it's such a tease because you want more of this incredible character. He developed his own style for the Joker. And Margot Robbie playing Harley Quinn, she was so amazing early on in this movie. They're giving her own film in the next year or two. She's going to have her own starring role as Harley Quinn. So You know, when it comes to David Ayer, the director, he still has a Zack Snyder style, which he did the Batman versus Superman. It's very dark. This is not like the Marvel films where it's kind of light and airy and comic booky. These are very serious, heavy-hitting films. And also we have cameos from Batman with Ben Affleck and Ezra Miller as The Flash, who's getting his own movie too, and in Justice League. So this is a two-hour movie that is so packed with so much stuff, very little plot, because it's all about the origin of these characters, and they have that third act where they fight this supervillain, this temptress from another world, which really falls apart. So it is a complicated, heavy movie, and I'm mixed on it. You know, I think it's fantastic for the characters, but the third act of the movie just made it kind of falls apart.
Is it still worth seeing?
Absolutely. I think so. I think it's a lot of fun just to see Will Smith playing Deadshot, to see the interaction of these supervillains. The Suicide Squad all interact so good. Their characters are really good. It's great just to see these actors in this makeup, you know, playing these characters. I think that it's worth it just to see all of that, definitely.
That was Jeffrey K. Howard. Thank you so much. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. You've been listening to International Edition. Glad you could join us here on VOA. You can find us anytime at VOAnews.com. Thanks so much for being here, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair Tai El Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Rights monitors report that an ailing Christian woman held in Iran's Evin prison for 3 years has been denied medical leave. Mariam Zargaran was arrested in 2012 and sentenced, because of her Christian faith, to 4 years in prison for supposed security-related crimes. She has been on a hunger strike for weeks, protesting the refusal of authorities to grant her medical treatment or leave. According to Iran's new Islamic penal code, prisoners can apply for conditional release after serving a third of their sentence. Ms. Zargaran is reportedly suffering from heart and hearing problems and other serious ailments, and has complained of poor treatment from the prison's clinic. Both Amnesty International and the U.S. State Department have noted and condemned the practice by Iranian authorities of denying proper medical care to prisoners of conscience and other political prisoners. Both have also noted that the persecution of religious minorities in Iran continues unabated. Iran remains a country of particular concern under the International Religious Freedom Act in the U.S. Christians, Muslims who do not adhere to the government's official interpretation of Islam, Yazidis, Jews, and most particularly Baha'is face discrimination, arbitrary arrest, imprisonment, and worse because of their faith. Despite President Hassan Rouhani's promise in 2013 that all ethnicities, all religions, even religious minorities, must feel justice. Iran has ratified the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and is a signatory to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, both of which guarantee freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. Secretary of State John Kerry has said that the basis of this critical freedom is respect.
And respect, in turn, demands legal equality. It demands that the practitioners of one faith understand that they have no right to coerce others into submission, conversion, or silence, or to literally take their lives because of their beliefs.
The United States, as President Barack Obama has said, remains committed to promoting religious freedom both at home and across the globe, and urges every country to recognize religious freedom as both a universal right and as a key to a stable, prosperous, and peaceful future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
4.